Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A big question is haunting Democrats. Will they squander a golden shot at the White House by dividing the party in a tooth-and-nail Clinton-Obama contest that can seem endless? A war of words has broken out over when and whether to stop the slugfest or even to talk about it. Former President Clinton says, chill out, let it roll.
Chill out. We're going to win this election if we just chill out and let everybody have their say.
Others, like Obama supporter Senator Chris Dodd, say enough already.
Enough is enough. And we want this to be over with. We want to get behind this candidate. And we want people to pull together to win that election in November.
This hour, On Point, the Democrats debate over their own long fight for the nomination. Joining me first today from Philadelphia is Larry Eichel, senior political writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's covered every presidential campaign since 1976. He's been following Clinton and Obama as they stump in advance of the big April 22nd Pennsylvania primary. Larry, welcome to On Point.
It's great to be with you.
So have people backed off of the supercharged tenor of the weekend here? Obama, Clinton talking a little nicer or not?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, you know, Obama said that obviously he thinks that it's fine for Clinton to stay in the race as long as she wants. That sort of diffused that a little bit.
That's big of him.
But exactly. But I think the more interesting question is whether it's not whether Hillary is going to drop out or should drop out or anything like that. It's sort of whether the Democratic voters in this state sort of buy into this idea that the race has gone on for long enough. Because the Democratic voters of Pennsylvania have a chance to end this. There's no question about that. I mean, this is a state that ought to be a Clinton state based on everything we've seen so far this year. If Obama somehow wins this state, I think the call for it to be over will become deafening.
But polls at this point do not show that coming, do they?
Well, there's one poll out today that actually has it even.
Really?
I'm not sure what to make of that. There are other polls that have come out this week that show the Clinton gap narrowing, her lead narrowing. So it's certainly getting closer. We know that. But the
conventional wisdom out of Pennsylvania has been likely Clinton victory, likely not to settle this.
Yeah, as they say, demographically, I mean, based on all we've seen this year, this ought to be a Clinton state. It is a state that is older than the country at large, as a whole. It has a lot of sort of white, lower-income voters that Clinton has done well with. It has a lot of Catholic voters that Clinton has done well with. It is similar in a lot of ways, although I think not identical, to Ohio, a state that she won by 10 points and at a key time. So she also has a lot of the political structure backing her, and particularly in the Philadelphia area, the Clintons as a family and Bill Clinton and Al Gore are all extraordinarily popular. So she has a lot going for her in this state.
And all of her talk this week is about hanging in. Let's listen to a little tape here. She was in Philadelphia, was it yesterday, comparing herself to the Sylvester Stallone character, Rocky, a Philadelphia film icon.
Senator Obama says he's getting tired of the campaign. His supporters say they want it to end. Well, could you imagine if Rocky Balboa had gotten halfway up those art museum stairs and said, well, I guess that's about far enough. That's not the way it works. Let me tell you something. When it comes to finishing the fight, Rocky and I have a lot in common.
Larry Eichel, is that fair? Does Obama look like he's getting tired of the campaign?
Well, you know, he made a couple comments a few days ago where he talked about how long the campaign has been going, and he compared it to a movie that lasts a half hour too long. He doesn't look or sound tired to me. I mean, he's just finishing a 6-day bus trip through the state, where he's, as one of my colleagues wrote, trying to live out every Pennsylvania cliche. You know, he's gone bowling, he's gone to chocolate factories.
Right.
You know, he's He's gone to hot dog stands. He's drank some Yingling beer. But I think all of that has played pretty well. I think he's trying to show that he's sort of a more down to earth guy than it's sometimes come across as. Although I'm not sure bowling wearing a tie was a sartorial statement.
Maybe not the blue collar neighborhood way. Here he is on Monday on the Today Show, asked if Hillary Clinton still has a chance of winning the Democratic nomination.
Everybody has a right to run, and you know, she has certainly earned the right to stay in this race as long as she wants. She has run a formidable race. I mean, we won 11 contests in a row, and that didn't knock her up. And that's some tenacity on her part.
Larry Eichel, there's making nice on Obama's part, but in the end, there's still a nomination to be won here. Is there any way to avoid the knockdown drag outside of this?
Well, I mean, I think in some ways, the only shortcut is for Obama to win here in Pennsylvania. And you know, initially we weren't sure how much of an effort he was going to put up here, given all that is working against him. But he is spending about $2 million a week on television in the state, which is a substantial amount of money. He, as I say, he's just finishing 6 days in a row full time here. I'm beginning to think that they think they might be able to win this state, and if they can win this state, I think it is over. You know, at that point, I suspect she will acknowledge it. I mean, if she can't win this state, if she loses this state, it really undercuts a lot of her arguments. You know, she's made these arguments about how well she's done in the big states that are key to a Democratic victory in November. Pennsylvania is certainly one of those states. Mm. If she loses that, sort of undercuts that argument.
But a big if still for Obama, and no guarantee that will be the end of it. Larry Eichel, I hope we can check in with you again as it all gets closer. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Sure, Tom.
Larry Eichel, senior political correspondent with the Philadelphia Inquirer. We're going to get some different angles on this primary fight today and on prospects for the Democrats generally in the November election. Joining me first to look at the really big picture is Ray Fair, professor of economics at Yale University. Since the 1970s, he's been studying how the economy affects presidential elections. He called the elections accurately in 2000 and 2004, and he's now seeing a favorable outcome for Democrats in 2008. We'll hear about that. He's author of Predicting Presidential Elections and Other Things. Ray Fair, welcome to On Point.
Yes, thank you. Nice to be on.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. Fair.
We'll go to the good professor in a second, Jack, but what do you see unfolding here if this continues trundling on down the road toward the convention in August?
Well, the record of the past would predict a Democratic defeat in that case. In 10 of the last 11 presidential contests, depending on how you calculate it, whether it could be 9 of 11, but I think it's 10 of 11, the party that had the longest nomination battle lost. And if you start looking at that even more closely, the party that had early primary contests, late primary contests, and convention battles, that party always lost. And if in addition to those three, the vice presidential nominee did not heal the wounds in the party, the candidate lost by a landslide. So Hillary Clinton is saying she's going to go to the convention. Well, that would be no party has won under that scenario. Mm. And the reason seems to be that the longer the nominating battle goes on, the more reasons candidate A gives why candidate B shouldn't be president, the more bad feeling it generates within the party. We've seen polls that say 30% of Hillary supporters would not vote for Obama. And the more independent voters decide, well, if they can't pull together their own party, why should we vote for them? Lee Atwater put this very well. He said, every Tuesday, that is, with each primary, a candidate is facing two challenges. A, people saying that this guy is not capable of leading the country, and B, people saying that not only is he not capable of leading the country, he's not capable of leading this party. And that is what independents seem to conclude. And finally, the longer the nominating battle, the greater the opportunity costs. The candidates are shooting at each other, not at the other at the other party. That other party has candidate has a freer ride to define himself and define negatively the Democrat, the opposite party. So all these reasons argue that there's a predictor. That the longer it goes on, the worse for the party.
A free ride maybe for John McCain. On the other hand, Dr. Fair, we've got Bill Clinton, no mean politician, but with clearly an interest here, saying, chill out, suggesting circumstances look good for us. Let everybody have their say. We're going to do fine. What does the analysis of the economic situation say here, Ray Fair?
Yeah, well, my work suggests that the not surprisingly, that the economy has a significant effect on how people vote. If the economy is doing well, people tend to vote to keep the incumbent party in power and vice versa. And so if we do have a recession this year, I mean, it's a little unclear whether we will have a recession, I guess, and how big it will be. But if the economy does, in fact, go into recession, then my econometric model explaining voting share suggests that the Democrats will win by quite a bit, with about 55% of the two-party vote.
That would be huge. Hold the thought. We'll come back and look at it. Celinda Lake will join us in just a moment. Ray Fair, Jack Beatty, we're talking about the Democratic race for the White House and whether it's time for Democrats to panic or chill out over the long Clinton-Obama contest. We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Hillary Clinton says, look at me, I'm Rocky. Well, what about it? 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Democratic race for the White House and whether it's time for Democrats to panic or chill out over the punishing, unending Clinton-Obama contest. Lots of questions here. What do you think? Is Bill Clinton right? Should Democrats just chill out and let things run their course? Or is the Democrats' brutal two-horse race killing their chances in November? If the Democrats slug it out all the way to the convention, to the end of August, will they have time to recover, to unify the party, and take on John McCain? And this, what do you think, are the calls for Hillary to concede just Obama strategy or party wisdom? Yale's Ray Fair is with us, and Jack Beatty, Celinda Lake will join us in a moment. Let's hear the full quote from Bill Clinton over the weekend, speaking to California Democratic Party members about the hard-fought primary and the need, he says, to let it go on.
Don't you let anybody tell you that somehow we are weakening the Democratic Party by telling the people in Pennsylvania and North Carolina and Indiana and Kentucky and West Virginia and Montana and South Dakota and Oregon and Puerto Rico that they count too. We are strengthening the Democratic Party. Chill out. We're going to win this election if we just chill out and let everybody have their say.
Bill Clinton over the weekend, we invited him on. Didn't work out. In fact, the Clinton camp came back to say we shouldn't even be talking about this. Chill out. Let it roll. Let everybody have their say. Well, it's too much not to talk about. I want to welcome into our conversation now from Washington, Celinda Lake, a leading Democratic pollster and strategist, major clients across the party, co-author of What Women Really Want. Celinda Lake, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Ray Fair says, look at the economy, look at the indicators. It is bad enough that the Democrats should be in very good shape in November, pretty much no matter what. Are you confident of that?
Well, I'm not confident of it, but I agree with Ray that the economy should be helping us. And looking at Ray's studies and others, it's really the state of the economy at the end of May and early June, an auspicious time for Democrats anyway. If voters think we're in recession then, it should be good for the Democrats. And obviously, I think that, McCain hurts himself every day that he says, I don't really understand the economy. That's kind of disqualifying for president right now. But he is getting a free ride, touring the country on his biography, setting the agenda around national security, which is formidable. And I think, actually, that what Democrats need to do is roll up their sleeves and get to work on him, that independent of our nomination process, ourselves and our allies really need to get active campaigning against McCain, defining him, revealing his records and his statements for what they are, because if we give McCain a free ride until end of August, we really will lose this election.
But can the Democratic candidates do that when they're still fighting tooth and nail with each other? Barack Obama taking some swings at McCain in the last couple of days. Hillary Clinton has as well, of course. They're both acutely aware that neither of them has clinched this thing yet.
Well, I think that we can't rely on the nominees alone to do it. And I think there are a number of avenues, a number of 527s that are out there, a number of institutions that are out there. And I think they're, you know, many of them are saving their money or donors on our side or waiting to see who the nomination is. And I think that's a huge mistake. I think their work, frankly, now is more important than it will be later.
Ray Fair, how persuaded are you by the economic numbers here? I mean, are they so compelling? Is there so much trouble on that front that the Democrats cannot botch this up? Is there any such thing as that kind of guarantee in the numbers you're looking at?
Well, if there's no recession, then the economy is, if the economy is okay but not great, then it's a different story. But if there is a recession, which most people seem to think there's going to be, then think about not so much July and August, but think about late September and October. The economy has been in a recession. The unemployment rate is rising. Growth rate is negative. People are really upset about the economy. You guys are harping on it day after day. I think that's got to hurt the McCain, the Republicans, that the Democrats will be in there day after day talking about how the economy is terrible under the Republicans. And so if it's in late September and October, it seems to me that's enough time for the economic news to get affected, to have an effect on the voters. On the other hand, if it's not a recession, the economy continues to do all right, the stimulus that we have in the middle of the year works a little bit and so on, then it's a much closer race. I still have the Democrats winning, but it's closer in that case, and some of these issues that are now you're talking about today could, in fact, matter more than they will, it seems to me, if there is, in fact, a recession.
Mm. And you've called them pretty well. A lot of nervousness out there. In the Obama camp, also, a real wish that the field would be cleared here. We heard, of course, Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy on Vermont Public Radio last week. He's an Obama supporter, but he more or less touched off this high-flame debate when he said, very clearly, it was time for Hillary Clinton to end her campaign.
There is no way that Senator Clinton is going to win enough delegates to get the nomination. She ought to withdraw, and she ought to be backing Senator Obama.
And like you, Celinda Lake, he was saying time to focus Democratic fire on John McCain.
John McCain, who has been making one gaffe after another, is getting a free ride on it because Senator Obama and Senator Clinton have to fight with each other. I think that her criticism is hurting him more than anything John McCain has said.
Jack Beattie, Senator Leahy has backpedaled a little bit, at least in terms of tone, since that and the firestorm that came after it. But what about it? You looked at the history that says can't win if you go all the way to the convention. Suggest that anyway. But there's an economic situation here which is very real, too. Maybe real enough that history is overridden.
Maybe so. I mean, the latest Gallup poll shows that 79% think the economy is getting worse. 79%. And not only do we have a slowing economy, we have, well, let's put it this way. The price of bagels in New York has gone up 40%. In other words, we also have inflation. And inflation in primary commodity, in things that people use every day. And effectively, that means real wages adjusted for inflation, are falling. It could be the worst of worlds economically for the Republicans, slowing economy, rising unemployment, but also high inflation on basic necessities of life, gas, bread. So that would argue no matter what goes on at the convention, the Democrats should win. On the other hand, our elections are decided really by 65,000 people in Ohio, independents, who don't like partisanship, who don't like bickering. And if there's one rule in all this, the longer television shows a convention, the more certain that party is to lose. So you give the TV people something to look at, and that will just a fight, a credentials committee fight, a minority plank sent to the floor from Hillary about the seating the delegates from Michigan and Florida. You do that, television has something to feast on. The independent voter says, I can't go with this party. They lose.
Let's hear from our listeners in South Carolina, Beaufort. Ken is calling. Hi, Ken. You're on the air.
Hey, y'all. Hey, Tom. Great show.
Thank you. What do you know?
Hey, I know. Here's the bottom line. These are the two best candidates. This is the greatest thing. I mean, these two candidates, I'd vote for either one of them. We need to chill out. We're overanalyzing this whole thing. We're eating our own young. We need to let them say what they're going to say. Either one of them was going to do a great job. The fact of the matter is we're coming off the worst presidency we've ever had, probably in the history of the country, for the last 8 years.
So you're on the Bill Clinton train, Ken, but do you have any worry that keeping it going undercuts the Democrats' chances, or none at all?
No, I'm on the Ken Vintner train. I just think that they're great.
Ken, we got it. Let's get another in Somerville, Massachusetts. Matt, you're on the air.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Well, I'd like to get your, I've heard this a couple of times, and I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more traction in the media. The adult thing to do is to have everyone instruct everyone in the Clinton camp and everyone in the Obama camp, no more focus on the other Democratic candidate. Hillary and Obama will focus entirely on making the case to the superdelegates as to why they are the best candidate to defeat John McCain, why John McCain's policies are flawed for America, why they, either Clinton or Obama, would make the best commander-in-chief. Forcing John McCain to fight in his decrepitude a two-front war. He's already having trouble with a zero-front war. So an intensive two-front war in which no fire would be directed at the other candidate. This is the adult way to do this. The party becomes strengthened, and let the superdelegates concentrate on the fact of who is better suited to defeat McCain and become a Democratic president.
All right, let's take a reality check on that with Celinda Lake. Celinda, is that possible? Could Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama kind of call a truce on bashing each other, go after John McCain, and that's the adult way, and everybody in the Democratic side maybe comes out a winner? Is that really possible when someone has to come out a winner when it comes to who sits in the Oval Office?
Well, I think it's a great idea. I think it's very unlikely to happen, and I think the problem is that either team will do whatever it takes to win, and you can't really ask them to do anything other than that. I do think it's also very powerful to Democratic voters to say, everyone needs to have their say. So I think there's a difference between ending in June when the primaries are over and ending in August when the convention is over. And what I hope is that the parties and the candidates will agree to a process where we do finalize the nomination in June, because I think it would be disastrous to go all the way to August.
Harold Ickes says it's hand-wringers who are worried about things going on longer, suggesting that, come on, this isn't a serious concern. We Democrats will be fine. What do you say, Celinda?
Well, I think that it depends on what the nature of your concern is. I think the first speaker, for example, illustrated, I truly believe the Democrats will be united behind either nominee.
Despite the polls saying that pretty large portions would peel off in anger if, the other Democrat got the nomination?
Yeah, because in point of fact, just a couple of weeks ago, you had over 80% of Democrats liking both candidates. And I think McCain and the Republicans will be a great uniter for the Democrats, so I think it'll be fine. But what I worry about are two things. They are running ads against each other right now that we will see in a general election. We will see the McCain campaign or the IEs say, even the Democrats say Barack Obama isn't good on security, or even the Democrats say Hillary Clinton can't unite the country. And those are not good ads. And then the second thing I worry about, as I said, is that we're giving McCain a free ride. I think there are other ways to solve that problem besides wringing our hands. And there's where I do agree with Harold. I think we should stop wringing our hands and get to it.
Let's go to Chris in Galilee, Rhode Island. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm Christopher Young, and I'm running for the United States Senate in Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah. We just heard from you. What's your opinion on this one, Chris?
Yes, sir. Well, I was reading the website wheretovote.com. That's W-H-E-R-E-T-O-V-O-T-E.com.
Yeah, we got it. What's your opinion, Chris?
My opinion is that Obama, Clinton, and McCain are all members of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a globalist organization.
Yeah, okay. Life is short. We got the point a couple of days ago. Let's go to Mariel in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Mariel, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much. I believe that it was about 8 years ago that Gore was running to be president, and because of the mess in Florida and the problems that were caused there, Gore gave up. I believe that's correct, and I believe that he gave up in the interest of unity for his party and unity in the country. Now, as a result of his giving up...
You mean instead of fighting George W. Bush all the way...
Mm-hmm. That's right. So instead of fighting, he did give up. And we see what happened, don't we? We see what's happened in the last 8 years and how deliriously happy everybody is.
Well, he stepped aside for a Republican, but do you think it's the same dynamic within the Democratic Party?
Well, I think it's worth considering, don't you? That there is a dynamic here that's saying give up, give up, give up for party unity, for the best interests of the country. We can see how the best interests of the people of this country have been misserved in the last 8 years.
Yeah, Mariel, I think we see where you're standing. Thanks for your call.
Well,
Jack, what do you say?
Well, you know, there is to pick up on Mariel's point, there is a misogynist tone to some of this. Someone has a website now. It's called Stop Running for President and Make Me a Sandwich. You know, that seems to be the advice that some Democrats are giving to Hillary. And I think she's playing on that now. She's not quite to the point of saying they're bullying me, but she is making an issue and even making ads from some of these out of some of these comments from Obama people that she should get out. She's taking ads in Montana and elsewhere saying, hey, they don't want you to vote. So she's using this this get out of the race, I think, both to slightly touch the idea that the men, all the suits are saying, get out of here and make us a sandwich, and then also just to voters in states that haven't been heard from yet, hey, they don't want you to speak up. They don't want to hear your voice.
Yeah, we saw Marie Coco writing in Real Clear Politics. You say, if it weren't so galling, it would be amusing to watch the Democratic men shuffling nervously in their television studio chairs, trying to conceal the audacity of their arrogance. Celinda, is there a gender problem here in the calls for Hillary to step aside?
Oh, I think it definitely energizes women. I think it definitely particularly energizes older baby boomer women and women over 60 who, you know, have themselves tried to buck up against the glass ceiling. And I think that I think Obama's right. It's a mistake to make those calls because all you need to do is have Hillary on the ropes and women will rise to defend her.
Ray Fair, we've just got you for another couple of minutes here. I wonder if there's anything unique in this very tough intra-party contest of the Democrats that shakes your confidence in economic analysis here. You've described what the numbers would be if the recession continues to open up, if it goes away. But is it possible for a party, you know, all on its own, to kind of bungle the process so that it overwhelms circumstances that ought to be favorable?
Let me say one thing, and then I'll come back to that point on that Jack said on inflation, which I also agree with. We could have inflation by the time the election happens in November. It may pick up. And also in my model, inflation has a negative effect on votes for the incumbent party. So if we get a recession or an increase in inflation or both, all of that is bad for McCain. The error term in this equation is about 2.5 percentage points. So on average, you make a mistake about every, you know, about 2.5 percentage points.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm predicting there's a recession or high inflation, I'm predicting 45%, then that's two standard errors away from a victory for the Republicans. That means that the unique things that are not in this equation that have to happen in this election to have the Republicans win have a very small probability of happening. I mean, it could happen if for some reason, let's say Clinton ends up getting the nomination but burns so many bridges behind her that a third of the Democratic Party is so mad they vote for somebody else. Then that could happen. The 5% error could be wiped out. All of that is highly unlikely. And so, it could happen, but it seems to me, given the likely state of the economy at the time of the election, that my guess is Democrats would be fine, that these really, really bad scenarios that you can talk about are not going to happen with respect to the Democrat convention.
So there's the sitting so pretty on the in the face of a bad economy that they can't mess it up view. Ray Fair at Yale University, thanks very much for being with us today.
Yes, thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Democratic race for the White House and whether it's time for Democrats to panic or chill out over the long, long Clinton-Obama contest. We've been joined by Jack Beatty and Celinda Lake, leading Democratic pollster and strategist, joining us today from Washington, president of Lake Research Partners, co-author of What Women Really Want. We're joined right now from Washington by Matthew Continetti, associate editor at the Weekly Standard. He edits and contributes to the magazine's campaign blog, The Campaign Standard. He's author of The K Street Gang, The Rise and Fall of the Republican Machine. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What do you see going on in this long slog, tooth and nail Democratic contest? Are the Democrats handing it to John McCain?
No, I don't think so. I think the race is settling into an equilibrium that actually helps the Democrats in November. Basically, the Democratic race for the presidency is tied, and it's going to be decided by the superdelegates probably before the convention, maybe at the convention. But it seems from what, you know, just looking at the tea leaves, that most of the superdelegates favor Obama. And even those who are uncommitted, they're probably waiting for Obama to make a major mistake or something like that, which it seems he's unlikely to do since he was able to weather the Reverend Wright controversy so well, it seems. So what you have now is two candidates who are tied, waiting for the final verdict of the superdelegates, which will probably go to Barack Obama, because it seems many Democratic superdelegates, since they haven't already joined the Clinton bandwagon, are a little bit leery about having the Clintons once again as the forefront of their party. So now, as we see with Hillary's recent attacks on McCain, you actually have two Democratic opponents hammering away at the Republican contender who, since the Democratic contest is still ongoing to some extent, loses all the headlines anyway. So basically you have a tag team against McCain, in which the Democrats still suck up all the headlines because of the races going and the general election campaign, which would be McCain's main opportunity to, kind of try to shape the narrative about his opponent, whoever that may be, is shortened. So
maybe cannon fire from a couple of different hilltops here. But what about Celinda Lake was saying, and others? I mean, there's a lot of fodder in this Democratic fight, too, that we could well see turned into ads for the general election by McCain and others supporting him, where they roll out the Democrats' criticisms of each other to support their GOP candidate.
Well, certainly that will probably be the case. I mean, both of the Democratic candidates have flaws, and McCain does have, the unique characteristic of being a Republican who appeals in this very unfavorable climate for Republicans. He's a Republican who appeals to independents and some Democrats. But what I'm saying, though, is if the race goes to the convention, then the general election won't begin until the Republican convention, which is the week after the Democrats have their nominee. And so from now until late August, when the Democratic convention begins, the headlines will continue to be dominated by the Democratic race. They already have plenty more coverage than McCain does. And so McCain may appropriate some of these criticisms later, but that window is much smaller. In the meantime, you'll have the airing of, gross misrepresentations like this 100 years comment, for example, which the Annenberg Public Policy Center and the Columbia Journalism Review has said, this idea that McCain wants the war in Iraq to last 100 years. Those two nonpartisan organizations have said that's a lie, that's not what he said at that time. Yet that's being aired on the campaign trail every day, which will only serve to hurt McCain.
So, Linda, how about it? Matt sees an opportunity for the Democrats to rain fire down from two angles on McCain here. You've expressed some concern, on the other hand, that in this long period he may burnish his kind of independent credentials, reach out to that independent voter that could be crucial in November. How do you balance those two dynamics, Linda?
Well, it's difficult, and I guess one of the concerns I have right now, honestly, since McCain is making a lot of mistakes, having to have, Senator Lieberman correct him several times on the factions in Iraq, which is supposed to be his expertise, saying I don't know anything about the economy. Right now, I'd like Senator McCain to be getting more airtime, and I think a lot of Democrats would, because he's making a lot of mistakes. And I don't think it'll be good for us if he, the coverage he gets is really controlled, and then the airtime all comes in a short window where he can really sustain his message. I also think that there's a real contrast here in terms of stamina, in terms of age, and I think a long campaign is to Senator McCain's disadvantage. A short campaign is to his advantage. So I'd like him to be getting exposure. I'd like him to be exposed to a grueling long campaign, and I worry that's not happening.
Jack Beatty, how about it? Matt says you just got twice as long for two candidates to rain fire down on McCain. Linda says she'd like him to talk more, but Matt sees a problem for Republicans in the long Democratic showdown. What do you say, Jack?
If the past is prologue, he's wrong. I mean, the past says that every candidate since 1964, really since the era of television in American politics began, if it's gone to the convention and or there's been a vice president who didn't heal the wounds caused in the primary, that party has lost, and usually lost by a lot. Now, maybe that's just a fluke. Maybe there are other reasons why these candidates lost. But people like Marty Wattenberg at UC Irvine and an important book called The Rise of Candidate-Centered Politics argues not that, that in fact, simply in an era of de-alignment, when voters are leaving both parties, if the party that can't unify itself quickly and get such unity as party labels give is at a loss to get that independent vote.
Bob Schrum, Democratic strategist, says we could lose the unlosable election in the bonfire of the vanities. Let's go to Saranac Lake, New York. Clyde, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think this primary, this Democratic primary with these two very, very fine candidates is the most positive thing to happen to the American democratic process in a generation. And ultimately, it's just not positive just for the process, but it's going to be positive for the Democratic Party, because after the convention, the Democrats are going to close ranks. There's no other choice out there for a Democrat. And the winning candidate is going to have name recognition. They're going to be vetted. They're going to be battle-hardened for the November election, and they're going to have a following. They've generated a huge following, not just among Democrats, but from independents, Republicans, and people from around the world.
But what about that margin that makes the difference in the race? Do you have no concern, Clyde, that John McCain, when he stands at the mic, says, my friends, that he may not pull them over into his camp while the Democrats go at it tooth and nail?
No, I don't think it's going to happen that way. The way I see it is, the Democrats are waging a very contentious campaign. It's a good campaign. We're hearing every kind of opinion on every kind of issue already, and it's bringing people into the process. And this is the way the process works. We should allow the process to continue to a convention, because that's what a convention is for. And as a Democrat, I'm very proud not just of the candidates, but of the Democratic process, and ultimately of what's going to happen at the convention. And it's just going to bring the Democrats together ultimately.
We hear it. Clyde, thanks for your call. Celinda, Democrats will close ranks, Clyde says. Are you so confident of that, no matter how deep the wounds in the meantime?
Yes, I am actually confident of that. And I think, if nothing else, the McCain-Bush agenda is very unifying for Democrats. I'm frankly not worried at all about Democrats. I'm worried about independents. And I'm worried about the messages they're getting about McCain versus our candidates. And I'm worried about when they're going to start seeing a real choice here.
Let's go to George in Litchfield, Connecticut. George, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a disgruntled candidate. I think we have two great candidates, but for the vice presidency. I think they both make great vice presidential candidates. I think we left the thoroughbreds at the gate. No one enticed Al Gore to get back into the race. I think Biden would have been a stronger candidate, and we wouldn't be in this pickle if we would have had a dominating candidate that people enticed to get into this race.
So Hillary and Barack, neither good enough for you?
Not really. I think the one is running a very slick campaign. He has 8 years as a state senator, a couple years as a senator, and the other was in the White House as the first lady and served a term as a senator. I think in these times, experience does matter, and I think it would have been with a little more foresight if the Democrats would have looked at some of the people who had great foreign policy experience like Biden, or who ran and was vetted as a candidate like Al Gore, who
or should have been president of the United States, yeah. To give him an opportunity with his background and his position.
Yeah, George, we've got it. We've got it loud and clear. Met Continetti, is that sort of the John McCain line there? Is that what we're going to hear from McCain himself, even though George is a Democrat, he says?
Well, we're seeing this week with John McCain's biography tour that he's trying to highlight his long career of service, as he puts it, and his experience. And that plays into what George is saying. In an election where experience may matter, that may serve to McCain's advantage. To go back to what we were talking about earlier about, you know, what happens. Is a brokered convention or, you know, a divisive convention going to lead to a Democratic defeat? I mean, it's possible that the Democrats will lose this election, but as Jack suggests, there are other reasons why that might be so. I mean, I read an article today in the Politico where the Obama campaign is kind of voicing what their general election strategy is, and it's going to be a mirror of what their primary strategy was, which is registering new younger voters, registering new African-American voters, and reaching out to white liberals in the hope that they will also be able to bring in enough independents to beat McCain. I think that's basically what Ned Lamont tried to do on a much smaller scale in Connecticut in 2006. He used the Obama coalition, or the Connecticut version of it, to beat Lieberman in a primary, but then he was swamped in a general election in November 2006. If Obama doesn't do more to reach out to those independents and the downscale whites that he's been losing to Clinton and the Latinos, then I think he has a real chance of losing the election.
Well, he's bowling and in the factories this week. Celinda, what do you say? Is it a Ned Lamont strategy that Obama's preparing to roll out against McCain?
Well, I think it's an interesting. I hadn't even thought of that hypothesis, honestly, and so I was really. That's really a creative idea, and I was really thinking about that. I think that Obama is able. I think both of our candidates will be able to appeal to independents. And I think that Obama's message of change is very, very powerful to them. I think they may have slightly different appeal to different groups of independents. I think that Hillary Clinton may appeal to more women, more downscale independents. I think that Barack Obama may reach very deeply into the suburbs, into younger voters, into perhaps more college-educated independents. So I think it's slightly different appeal. But I think both of them would be advantaged by being able to do that starting in June and not in September.
Jack, what do you say? Obama's setting himself up on the other side. Whatever happens here, to win in that middle ground Matt's talking about, or to hoity-toity?
Well, in this battle for independent voters, McCain is very well situated. His favorability rating is 67%. That's political capital. And every poll shows him with a margin over Obama among independent voters. The only thing that's going to reduce that is a steady attack from the Democrats that makes him seem less palatable to independents. That's not going to happen in anything like full-throated volume. If they keep going to the convention. So on the one hand, McCain's got that great advantage with independents. But on the other hand, what he's trying to do, it has happened only once in 100 years. That is a incumbent party, 8 years, non-vice president running for the 12th mm-hmm. year. That's happened once. And by the way, that was Herbert Hoover in 1928.
A while back now, and not the most illustrious name in political history, let's go to Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well. What do you see there, Cheryl?
Good. Well, I guess I really feel that the Democrats are making a mistake by not permitting Michigan and Florida to vote for their candidate. I think that should they permit that again, we would find that Obama and Clinton actually might stop fighting against each other.
Who do you think would come out a winner there, Cheryl, if those two step?
I really don't know. I think it's probably pretty equal, but I think at least Clinton would be more happy with the fact that she's at least getting the voters to vote for her, and that, you know, we can't hold that over her head later on down the road, and her saying, well, I didn't get the votes from Michigan, or I didn't get the votes from Florida because they weren't permitted to vote.
Yeah, another couple potential booms in a minefield. Let us look at that. And thank you, Cheryl. Celinda, what about it? That's not going to go away as an issue. How do Michigan and Florida play out as the Democrats, you know, get down to the fine hairs in the numbers?
Well, we need to have a compromise on Michigan. I think it's hard, frankly, to the revotes, first of all, Florida's already said they won't.
Yeah.
The money that it costs, it's hard to see how that happens. But having said that, I think there'll be some compromise that will seat the delegates along some formula. But also, I think it's pretty important that if we're going to run any kind of party, that we just not let states decide when they go. And it's also got to be fair to Obama, who didn't run in these states. So I think that it'll be some kind of allocation formula that won't change the results, but we'll see the delegates.
Matt Continetti, I wonder what you made of Professor Fair from Yale earlier saying, you know, he's worked the numbers for years now on the economy. If you see a certain economic profile, it's going to have a certain political outcome. And this year, he sees it going to the Democrats. It's just, even if the recession doesn't open up, even if the problems don't get bigger, are economics destiny this year, Matt?
I don't think economics are ever destiny. And there have long been problems with Professor Fair's model. But the ultimately, there are factors at work here about identity in this election, which makes it unusual. There are factors about, obviously, ideology, and it's a national security election, despite people say, even the voters now saying that it's an economy, at the economic election. At the end of the day, there will still be two wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and a larger war on terror. There are factors here that may prove Professor Fair wrong.
Matt Continetti at the Weekly Standard. Matt, great to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Author there of The K Street Gang, and Celinda Lake in Washington, co-author of What Women Really Want. Celinda, great talking with you. Thank you for joining
us. Thank you so much
today.
For having me.
So there you go, Jack. Do you see it ending before the convention? Do you think they might still work that out?
Well, now I see Harry Reid saying we have to get it done by July 1st. That's the Howard Dean position. On the other hand, for Hillary, I think the question is she running for 2008 or 2012? If for 2012, she wants this to go to the convention and wants Obama to lose.
Whoa.
So she can run against the 74-year-old John McCain in 2012.
There's the never-ending Rubik's Cube to turn. Jack, thanks very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.